Microsoft is touting its coming release of SQL Server, known as SQL Server 2025, as the AI-ready enterprise database. Redmond is saying that SQL Server 2025 will include some of the biggest innovations Microsoft has provided in a decade. And one of the biggest of those big innovations, they say, is the integration of AI directly into the database engine, enabling more intelligent search. We will dig into these claims on today's episode with not just one, but two Andrews who know a lot about data and AI. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing podcast. I am Mary Jo Foley, the editor-in-chief here at Directions. I'm your host for the series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. So let me introduce my two guests today. Andrew Brust is the founder and CEO of Blue Badge Insights, which advises data and analytics ISVs, solution providers, and customers on their analytics strategies. He serves as a Microsoft Regional Director and MVP, and he's also co-chair of Visual Studio Live, SQL Server Live, and the Artificial Intelligence Live conferences. Directions on Microsoft's Andrew Snodgrass analyzes and writes about Microsoft's data management, business intelligence, and machine learning solutions, as well as aspects of licensing. Before joining Directions, Andy, as we will refer to him today on the show to reduce confusion, was Vice President of IT for a global Fortune 500 company where he directed overall IT activities and strategy for the company's global operations. Hello, guys. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
How are you? Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's a delight to be here.
Nice. Okay, let's go right into SQL Server 2025 because we have a lot to talk about. So SQL Server 2025 recently entered public preview. And before we start getting into all the AI aspects of the release, let's talk about some of the generalities for a minute. I'm curious what's exciting to each of you about this release besides AI. And no, you cannot say the new SQL Server icon. You have to say something else. Andrew Brust.
Icons never do it for me. I'm way too jaded for that. Also, SQL hasn't really had an icon for a long time. So the whole industry has made do with one from, like, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. That kind of wavy tornado looking thing. But there are some things other than AI that are quite exciting here. You have to be kind of a geek to appreciate them. But one big thing is that there's a new system stored procedure. It's got an awesome name. It's really, really catchy. SP_invoke_external_rest_endpoint.
Well, that trips off the tongue, doesn't it? Sure,
right? <that's... laughs> Yeah. But what that does is it links SQL Server to all kinds of REST APIs. And by the way, that has a big AI side to it as well, but it's not exclusive to AI. So okay. That one's quite exciting because it really connects SQL Server to so many other capabilities that are in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And there's also some good stuff around JSON, and you want to get really geeky, regular expressions, regex support right inside the language. These are things that people have been kind of futzing and, you know, patching to get in there, and now it'll be built in the way it should.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you, Andy? What are you excited about here?
Well, to give you an idea on it, this will show you how old I am as well as how long I've been in SQL Server. The first one that I got, it's always got to be around the performance side of things. Mm-hmm. And there's two very geeky things, and I'm sure Andrew will enjoy as well. There's one that's a transaction ID locking, and then there's another one that's called lock after qualifications. And both of these things make me smile for very peculiar reasons. Okay. They're really designed for write heavy workloads. Okay. We got lots and lots of users. You know, a lot of people think like online commerce sites, and that's what Microsoft likes to put in it. Mm-hmm. I come from a background with big power plants, and we were doing huge amounts of continual data extraction from logs and all kinds of things. And this type of thing helps on a large scale for that. The other thing I like on it is that I think they're pushing back on some of the advancements that they're seeing in their competitors. You know, scaled out capabilities that we saw in Postgres or in Mongo or Cassandra or any of the rest of these. And it keeps SQL Server relevant. Mm-hmm. And I like that part because I think they had a little too much focus on let's do all Azure connection to the detriment of let's make this a better product on and on and on. So anyway, I really like that one. And the other one is one that Andrew brought up on the JSON side, as well as the GraphQL capabilities. I know this isn't traditional T-SQL and relational database, and all the rest of that. But for SQL Server to keep its relevance and to keep it at the center of a lot of processes and applications, not be replaced by Postgres and a bunch of others, our child has to play nicely in the playground with these. And having more JSON capabilities and GraphQL and the rest of it means we can use this source database and technology for a lot of different things. And so I like this kind of focus on the inside as well as expanding on the outside. So those excite me.
Okay.
And Mary Jo, you probably didn't want to fall down this rabbit hole right at the beginning, but I just want to build on something that Andy said, because if we're going to have a battle for how old we each are, I've been using SQL Server. I've been using SQL since the first version of it that ran on Windows, which was 4.2 in like 1993. Mm, yeah. And what's interesting about it, and again, I'm just building on something Andy said, it's always been about this weird balance between remaining true to its roots on the one hand, but also acting as a platform where new technologies that are not bleeding edge, but vetted, get added to the platform. And the whole idea there is that people who know SQL Server and T-SQL shouldn't have to move real far to start using those things, right? Those things should come to the SQL platform. Now, sometimes new stuff comes in and it goes away just as quickly. When I first wrote
big data clusters, is that what you're saying?
Well, that went away really quickly. I was thinking of something much older, which was the support for the .NET Common Language Runtime, which came in quite a long time ago. Everyone was so excited about that, and database administrators basically wouldn't turn it on. So you always have to have that kind of jaded, skeptical view of these new features, because you know not all of them will make it through the process, the DBA kind of filter, right?
Yeah.
But
right.
The ones that do stick, and they're usually pretty solid things.
Which does a nice segue into what we're going to talk about here, isn't it, Mary Jo?
Yeah.
Because I think this is done the right way with the AI, the vector search stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So Microsoft's saying SQL Server 2025 is now a vector store, right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what does that mean and why are you excited, Andy? You said in a recent report you did for Directions that Microsoft is adding natural language search in the right way to SQL Server 2025.
Yeah, right way, right. Well, the right way for T-SQL developers. Let's go with that. I think that's probably a fairer statement on it.
Right.
And a vector store. Yeah, semantics get to be really, hey, semantics, that's a good phrasing to use around all this. So semantics get to be really critical on this. And I wouldn't put what we're doing in SQL Server 2025 as in the same class with large-scale vector databases that specialize in this area. They do a lot more than what we're talking about here. Okay, but I think what they're doing with vector search and with vector capabilities in SQL Server is the right way of doing it. Okay, now, vector search, just so if anybody's listening to this, this is an advanced way of finding information based on intent, context, semantics, that type of thing, rather than relying on specific or exact words, which is what we've always had to do in SQL Server. You know, it's the kind of thing if you put into a chat window natural language, right? That's our goal, is I want to be able to type something in there and have it find the data for me in the database. Well, in SQL Server, we've always had limited text searching capability. There's some full search or full text search, there's semantic search, there's like, there's a bunch of things we have been doing, but it hasn't met the standards of what we're doing with large language models and everything that we're seeing in the market now. Okay. And so I think this is a nice move to say we're going to have SQL Server be able to leverage a large language model, an LLM, and have it process two critical things. One is the SQL Server text data that we're storing in the database, but also the user's natural language question that they're asking, you know, find this type of data for me. And if we process both of those text items through an LLM at different times, then we can look for things far better than we could before. And to give you an idea on it, my background, right? I mentioned earlier some of the nuclear side. I come from a lot of industries that are very tightly regulated. Okay, there's pharmaceuticals, power plants, government sites, and stuff like that. Okay, we always have air gap networks in these environments that prevent moving data, any kind of data, outside of our control. It's got to stay within the fence. What that means is a lot of these organizations that have SQL servers storing lots of data that's out there find it very difficult to add in some kind of natural language search when they aren't able to push it outside of their environment. And so what we're able to do here is we can actually tie SQL Server into an LLM locally and do things that we couldn't do on the outside before.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Andrew.
Yeah.
I know you're chomping at the bit.
He is chomping at the bit. Go for it.
Did you know, by the way, that it's actually champing at the bit? I've said chomping on the bit entire life, but yeah.
Champing at the bit. So strange.
Oh, this is a different discussion then. I got to get in on that.
Okay. Yeah. And at the bit is another nice pun for, you know, talking about software and databases, I suppose.
Nice.
But yeah, but actually continuing on the theme of SQL Server trying to find a balance between the old and the new, it also has this kind of subtle feature called hybrid semantic search, which actually combines the full text search that it's had for a long time, which can be, you know, very effective for certain domains, right, and certain problem spaces. And it combines that with the vector search and then kind of melds everything together and ranks the kind of the combination of the two. And so, first of all, I think this makes sense in an enterprise context where sometimes we need the more literal search. And in general, it works really well because this is a search exercise that is not necessarily used in the RAG workflows, in the retrieval augmented generation workflows. It can just be used for straight up search, which in the world of transactional databases, operational databases, is going to be highly, highly relevant. So what's nice, and again, I'm basically saying what Andy said in terms of things being added the right way, is it's great to have the vector search in here, and it's great to be able to do all this Gen AI stuff, but it's also important to kind of stay true to your roots, right, and be able to do stuff that's also really kind of workaday value and enterprise requirements. And I think SQL Server's walking the line really nicely here. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say on it, that was one of the things I looked at on it. I didn't want to get too technical on it, but I'm amongst friends, so let's do this. SQL Server has always been incredible at high-performance indexing, at storing arrays of data. You know, it was doing key values in graph-related data before those things became separate things, right? You know, graph-related data. So you have vectors and you have indices and all kinds of capabilities of saying we have this highly relational data with numbers, right? SQL loves this type of thing. And so the idea that we created a vector data type that we can create columns here, it's a natural fit. This doesn't seem like a huge extension in my mind of saying we're going to store arrays of values that represent text so that we can do semantic related searching based on feedback we get from an LLM. This fits well in the spectrum of what SQL does.
Agreed. Again, it's comparing the old to the new and making them coexist, which most tech companies don't do real well. Usually the new shiny objects are people go all in on that.
Yeah.
And forget the old stuff that the corporate customers still need. And it's not okay to do it either way. It's not okay to forget all the old stuff. And it's not okay to be like so beholden to the old stuff that new things that generally work well aren't integrated into the environment. And I think Andy hits it right on the nose when he basically says, even if not in so many words, that Microsoft's very good at picking things that are kind of adjacent So the mainstream of operational database work and bringing those in rather than sort of stretching too much and bringing in things that are kind of cool, but not really practically relevant. Yeah. It just brings in things that are close by. And what that also does is it increases and enhances the skill sets of practitioners who work on the SQL Server platform. So they have that, like, that's something in it for them, right? And I usually that cooperative or symbiotic relationship is the recipe for success.
Mm-hmm. With the exception of big data clusters. I had to throw that in one more time.
Okay,
that's like a whole other episode, Andy.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so we're talking about the balance, the whole balance thing, but there are examples of things where I'm guessing, at least, that where you two think vector search would work better than using a database engine without vector search. Do either of you have examples of what you think might fit there, like vector search works better than database engine without?
Well, I mean, I guess the point is it's built for semantic search. So rather than looking for literal strings or phrases, you're looking for concepts. We didn't have the ability to do conceptual search before, but we've had this kind of concept out there all the way back to the introduction of the semantic web. Everybody's kind of yearned for this, but it hasn't been computationally pragmatic, and now it is. So time to bring it in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agreed with it. And you know, my falling in on that, my background in data paranoia, right, is working for a pharmaceutical. You know, we would have loved this kind of thing, all right? So we've got some kind of big trial going on, tens of thousands of patients that are out there, hundreds and thousands of doctors and nurses and clinicians and everything else. And everybody's writing up their responses to it. You know, we always try to be very specific with questions and, you know, little buttons and true, false and the rest of this. And you can only get, you know, limited data on it. You really need the notes. And the notes were always the most difficult one, and trying to get those things collaborated and understand what the intent was and what the results of their analysis were and bring all these things together. You know, so how nice would it be now that we have all this data stored in SQL Server and we've got a blob field with notes in it, you know, or an invarchar max, and we've got lots of text that's out there, and we run that through a semantic model and chunk it up, and we do all our analysis and we run queries. And then you could come back and say, all right, I need to know about patients who suffered from depression following the administration of this particular drug. Okay. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a checkbox that we're along that way, or maybe somebody missed the checkbox, but it could go through all the text, the thousands and thousands of responses that are out there from all these hundreds of different people, and give you a decent response to say, here are some that we found that whether the word depression was used in any of the notes or not, it would find similar things for us. That's the type of value that I would see in this.
Hmm. Okay.
And there's even within vector search, there's two kinds, right? We have more of this balance, right? You can do a brute force search without an index where you'll be looking for much more precise matches, but that only works for kind of small data sets. And then you, with vector indexes and algorithms like approximate nearest neighbor and disk approximate nearest neighbor, which I know Andy is excited about from his report, that lets you do things a little less precisely, but at scale. And so there again, that works. Like maybe the vector databases, the dedicated vector databases that are out there, will do the scale better. Right. But in an operational database application, you may only have a small row set that came back, in which case you can afford to do the brute force. Right.
Exactly.
So that's
or
kind
if
of
you've, go ahead. If you've got time, you know, if you've got time, I know that Microsoft put a 50,000 row recommendation of don't go beyond this. But you know, if you've got the resources and if you're going to say take an hour, you could come up with a decent summary on it. It kind of depends on how responsive you need it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And again, there's going to be the high-end cool stuff that the AI, you know, cloud ISVs are going to be doing, right? And then there's the long tail of stuff that the enterprises are going to be doing. And they're like, give me a database that does this long tail stuff really well, right? And don't kind of bother me with all this high-end stuff that I'm never going to touch. That's a poor investment of resources in terms of the platform. And yeah, so that's really been the calculus, I think. And Microsoft's done a pretty good job. They've also done a good job of using Azure SQL databases, the place where they experiment and get stuff right before they put it in the SQL Server products, right? And ship it.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of some of those customers, huh?
Right.
I don't know. You can do it either way. You can have the cutting edge features, or you can wait till a more conventional software shipment.
Yeah.
Well, again, Andy, it's that balance.
Andrew, you I'm sure you've seen this as well. You know, over our careers, how many times have you seen somebody use a SQL Server database for something that you never thought it could be used for? You know, they will take this hammer and hit any nail with it. Okay. Yep. And the number of things where I've walked into somebody's shop and they show me what they've done with SQL Server, I go, you know what? I never even considered that before, but that's really interesting. So who knows what this is going to be used for?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other hand, you know, sometimes they're good outcomes in that scenario. And sometimes they're like, why? I mean, you know, the theory of computation is that you can implement anything on any, you know, computationally complete platform. That doesn't mean you should.
You know what? That's my motto in life. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right. 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 But I think it's all about kind of hitting the right equilibrium. And I think that the team has done good stuff here. On the other hand, I want everyone to recognize that almost every operational database out there has been adding vector capabilities. So Microsoft is not like, it's not a unicorn by any means here. And this does mean that the dedicated vector guys, the folks like Pinecone, the folks like Milvus, you know, their future is a little dicey, frankly. Because you know, they're very specialized, they're very niche actually. And oftentimes in the database world, startups around there get a lot of attention, they get a lot of funding, and then they get acquired. So keep your eyes out for that.
Okay. All right. On that note, I'm going to take a break so that I can talk about directions on Microsoft's new and improved online platform called Atlas. It is now officially up and running. Yay. Atlas is where we host our in-depth analyst reports on Microsoft Enterprise, technology and licensing, our up-to-date and powerful infographics and roadmaps, and it gives you a centralized place to register for our webinars and licensing boot camps. If you're already a Directions member, you've already been automatically upgraded to Atlas. If you're not yet a member, you can still check out our blogs and podcasts, which are open to all if you go to directionsonmicrosoft.com/blogs or directionsonmicrosoft.com/podcasts. And while you're on the new site, feel free to do a search or two so you can see a sneak peek of all the great Microsoft Enterprise technology and licensing content to which our members have access. To learn more about all the content and services we offer, go to directionsonmicrosoft.com/membership. Okay, back to SQL Server 2025 with the Andrews. We are talking about vector search, non-vector search, but adding vector search does come with some costs. As Andrew Snodgrass pointed out in his report, it's likely going to place an additional burden on databases and increase your compute resource requirements. So that obviously, I would think, would lead to increased costs. So is the trade-off worth it? Who wants to start there?
I will say it's worth it. Here's why, right? If you want to do generative AI stuff and vector stuff, before this, your choice was to bring in some other external platform and mash it all up. Actually, I think RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation, is a horrible hack because it requires going one place to generate your vector embeddings, then kind of pulling it together with your database stuff, doing some kind of a search, and then going out maybe somewhere else to actually submit the prompt and get back a response from an LLM for, you know, for the AI side of it rather than just the vector side of it. And that has all kinds of expenses, not just in terms of like procuring the other services necessary, but the skill set required and the, I don't know, the context switching required for developers to mush together two or three platforms like that. The first time I saw that, I was like, well, the output is cool. You can do some pretty innovative stuff, but this won't kick it in the enterprise because it's just too Rube Goldberg, right? So in integration, but putting stuff together in a single platform and just making it more seamless, like that's a feature. Without that feature, you've got costs. And there's also going to be the issue I referenced before, which is that the database administrators, like if they don't want the cost that's going to come from this, then they're going to disallow it anyway.
Yeah. So right.
I'm not terribly worried.
No. And I think you've got a really good point there. You know, there will be cost. Hey, if you're going to add in natural language search, some kind of semantic AI vector-based stuff, you're going to have to pay for it somewhere. And Andrew is exactly right. Tying all these things together can be a real nightmare. And especially when you get into the understanding that you're transferring your data. Okay? And data paranoid guy, right? That's the one that really bothers me. Having data really go outside of my control, especially out to the cloud, to another service, coming back to me, I get really fidgety when that type of thing happens. Now, what the cost is going to be like, well, it kind of depends, you know, and that's what we always say, directions, especially in the licensing side, your cost is going to depend. And in most areas, I can imagine it's not going to be a substantial increase, although it will require additional compute capabilities. You know, if we go back to my pharmaceutical clinical trial example on it, if I've got, you know, tens of thousands of this information coming in and is happening over a 6-month period, it's not high volume, not high transaction. And then adding in these vector columns, they're numbers. We optimize number columns in SQL anyway. So I don't see a big database storage related issue here. What I think we run into is if we are trying to process a lot of changing data and on a frequent basis, if we've got a large number of concurrent users coming in here performing searches on it. At that point, it's just like any other transaction that you do on a SQL database. It's going to increase compute requirements. You're going to have more cores. You're going to have more licenses. But that's part of what you're expecting anyway if you're adding this into your database app. So, yeah, I think it'll increase cost. It all depends on how much, depending on the app.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. The thing to remember, of course, is that AI increases costs no matter what. And what's been horrible is everybody's so excited about AI that they kind of have this implicit assumption that it's free. It's not, right? And it can really mess up your architecture overall if you're not thinking about costs and if you're not thinking about the hidden costs, as I was discussing before about, you know, having to integrate too many different disparate platforms and put them together. So what I would say is the cost is there no matter what. The question is how mitigated is the cost? And I think SQL Server, with its kind of in-process approach to all these things, especially the air-gapped on-premises implementations by having local models in OLAMA that Andy mentioned, like that's huge, right? And there just has, like, nobody's really been stopping to think about it because everybody's so drunk on the innovation of AI, they're not thinking through the practical consequences of it. And I feel like Microsoft has done that on behalf of the customers.
Exactly. You know, and if the listeners don't take away anything else from it, I love that point Andrew came up with, is this is the practical side of it. You know, the number of people that I talk to who are still in the trenches doing this on a daily basis, you know, since 2023, their response to me has been, it's not for us. We're not going to be able to do this. We can't leave our data. We can't exfiltrate this. We can't share this data. We don't trust anybody. This has to stay here. So when you give me a has to stay here solution like this is, then I'll talk about it. And this is what they're talking about.
And I think if you look at SQL in Fabric, then there's going to be added costs there too, because it's just another SQL Server implementation, but at least they're setting it up there so that the capacity you're paying for in Fabric covers this as well, right? So that you're procuring everything together in terms of your Fabric usage, and you're not you're not bolting something else on that's hard to budget for. So yeah, there's no free lunch.
Go ahead. We need to have a whole nother session just on fabrics. Consumption of capacity units and all the funky little formulas they have. Because I'm building this massive spreadsheet of how do you do it in all these different places. It's crazy.
And that could be, you could build like a SQL Server database to track all this. And then you could have one of those applications where you said, I never thought of using a SQL Server database.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything looks like a nail when you have a hammer.
It's all dog food. Yeah.
All right. Last question for you two. Anything else we did not cover today that you think our listeners would want to know about SQL Server 2025?
There's a couple of Power BI things in here that I think are good. First of all, Power BI, since you guys are licensing nerds, you'll love this, right? Power BI Report Server, which has been out there for a few years and is a superset of SQL Server reporting services, is now going to be the default on-premise report server in every single paid version of SQL Server. Yep. Previously, the only way to get this was either to have a Power BI premium subscription, which starts at something like $5,000 a month, and or to have SQL Server Enterprise with software assurance. Those were the only two ways to get Power BI report server. So as a result, not a lot of people had it. Now it's going to be the default. And it's, again, it's a superset of reporting services. So you don't really lose anything, but you do get the option of running Power BI reports on-prem.
I think that's really interesting on it as well. I mean, there's a fabric way you can do it now with F64 and higher if you do capacity reservations. It gives you that same thing as the premium P's on it. The only thing I'll, for the listener's perspective on it, it is a superset of SQL Server reporting services. And in fact, if you go to the install, when you do the install, it asks you, do you want to do PBRS, PBIRS or SSRS for all of our acronym enabled friends there. And the big thing on this is that when you go to Power BI report server, you adopt a modern lifecycle on it. Right? And that means updates come out quarterly. It's not like SQL Server where you can put off an update to see you for as long as you want to. You need to keep these things up to date. And so it's going to be a more frequent update cycle. But aside from that, I agree with you. I think it's a fine thing to do. I was just writing a report on it. I think it really impacts some of our static. that was in air quotes, by the way, static customers. when they come off of 2022, which doesn't happen until 2033. And so it's kind of an 8-year window to make this decision, which is a little unusual right now for a service, but it's kind of cool. So yeah, agreed. I like it.
Yeah. There's even some enhancements to analysis services, which is really sort of the very on-premy version of the Power BI engine. There's been some additions to the DAX language, including the ability to do regressions and stuff without a whole bunch of machine learning bolt-ons. So there's going to be unsung heroes in this release as well. I think that's always a good sign when there's so much good stuff that some of the useful stuff doesn't even get that much of a spotlight. Because I don't know, it's just everybody doing their job and incrementally moving things along. That's a good sign, I think.
Yeah, agreed. The thing that we've always, at Directions anyway, we've always really liked about the SQL Server group, okay, the team that's there, is they always have this wonderful balance. One, they come out with fabulous products. They do a great job of adding things in, like we saw with the vector capabilities. But they think about the customer base. And so just like with 2022, 2025, it's been 3 years, those versions coming out, has something for everybody. You know, if you're an on-prem customer and your world is on-prem and you stay on-prem and you're data paranoid like I am, this is still really interesting for you. It's a nice release and there's stuff in there that you're probably really going to want to take a look at because it'll make a difference in your environment. At the same time, I also like a lot of the Azure integration stuff. Okay? The last version was the most Azure enabled. This is the most AI enabled. Okay, we're getting a theme here on how the marketing people look at SQL Server. But there's stuff with the database mirroring into Fabric that I think is fantastic. There's some improvements to the real-time data ingestion capabilities that are there. There's some security improvements as well. There's a lot of stuff
And
all over the place.
change event streaming, integrating with Azure Event Hubs too.
Exactly, right? And so if you're in the Azure world, or if you're not, I think the database product has a lot to talk about this time. Yeah.
Right. On that note, I want to say thanks to the Andrews, Andrew Brust and Andrew Snodgrass.
Da-da-da.
We will each say you're welcome.
Indeed.
You're welcome.
I
You're
also would
welcome.
like to remind our listeners they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directions on Microsoft.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics that you would like to hear the directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via X or Blue Sky. Directions on Microsoft is on LinkedIn, so make sure you follow us over there. And also follow us on social media. On X, we are Directions MSFT. On Blue Sky, Directions on Microsoft. And if you do that, you'll get all the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thanks again.